Welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators, a podcast with marketing and business tips and strategy specifically for freelance translators and interpreters. I'm your host, Tess Whitty, a longtime freelance translator with an education and professional background in marketing. Tune in to hear tips from my own experience or from other translators and industry experts. This episode is sponsored by TransPDF. If you regularly get translation projects in PDF format, like I do, and need to convert them into editable format or even directly into an XLIF format, I recommend you go check it out. TransPDF converts your PDF into high-quality XLIF files ready for translation with your own tool. Then it uses your translated XLIF to give you a finished PDF with all the layout and style of the original. The system has just been upgraded to handle right-to-left languages, so Arabic, Hebrew, Persian, and Urdu, and will automatically adjust page layout and reading direction. For example, a Spanish magazine page with columns running left to right can become an Arabic page with column running right to left. It also handles scanned PDFs, is available from within MemoQ, MemSource, and OnTram, and it includes a free use of Infix PDF editor for any last-minute changes to your translated PDF. Get your free trial now by visiting transpdf.iceni.com. There are also special offers available for pros.com users. Hello and welcome to another episode of Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you are all doing well today. Now, I have encountered many translators that feel stuck in their business and unable to grow. Many of you have also wanted me to provide more episodes where I interview regular translators that talk about their business. And today, you're in luck. One of my alumni students from the Marketing Mastery for Experienced Translators recently gave a presentation at the American Translators Association's conference where she shared how she resurrected her freelance translation business after experiencing a serious downturn for almost a full year. And she will cover why the slump happened, the mistakes she made, the steps she took to correct them, and what she learned. But before I welcome her, a quick shout out to one of our listeners. This one goes to Clem Lachouette from France. She says, very useful professional tips. I wish I had all this information during my master's degree in translation. Being a freelance translator requires to search so much information that is sometimes hard to find. This podcast helps me to settle my strategy and organize my work. Thank you for your work. So thank you, Clem, for taking the time to leaving me a review. I really appreciate it, and it makes it all more worth it for me. And now I would like to welcome Marguerite, or Grete Storm, to the podcast. Welcome, Marguerite.
Well, thank you for having me, Tess.
It's a pleasure having you. Which do you prefer that I call you, Grete or Marguerite?
I'll probably Grete, yeah. Okay. That's more comfortable with that.
Okay. And I'm having a hard time saying it the American way, Grete. I'll try.
No, that's fine. I like the Belgian way anyway, you know.
Yes, yes.
My way is Grete.
Grete. And yeah. I used to live in Belgium, so that's why. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your career in the translation business.
Well, I am a Belgian citizen, mm-hmm. and I grew up in Belgium and then lived in France for a while. I've moved to the United States 5 years ago to marry my high school sweetheart, who's an American. And I have been a translator since 2000 basically is when I started.
Mm-hmm.
The before that, well, I'm 69 years old, which sometimes I wonder if this is a factor, this is a topic to be addressed or not. I think it is in a way, but mm-hmm. it's not stopping me at all. It's not slowing me down, far from that.
Good.
So that's pretty much what I have. Three children who are back in Europe, and they came with me to the US to study, mm-hmm. and they are back and adults now. And so I travel back to Europe, France and Belgium. Very often, several times a year, to visit my family,
yes.
and work at the same time.
So, what did you do before you became a translator?
I did several retail jobs. My first husband and I had a Scandinavian furniture store in downtown Brussels.
Mm-hmm.
Which was we opened in 1975, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a groundbreaking because Brussels furniture was more Italian and
yes.
things like that. That was the fashion, and we loved, still do love, the Scandinavian style, which is really never gets old and never goes out of fashion. It's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that for several years, and it worked out really well. But then my husband started having health problems, and so we had to give that up. And unfortunately, the store does not exist anymore.
Mm.
But that was my main occupation before that.
And what made you decide to become a translator?
Well, when I came to the U.S., I really thought about how can I really benefit from this unique situation of myself being in a foreign country, a very different culture, and for long term. So
mm-hmm.
I really had time to completely know my native culture and language, of course. And here I have the opportunity to develop the same knowledge in a different culture. And I think there's a way to, share that in a profitable way. That's kind of how I got to translation. And it came to me pretty naturally because I love reading, I love words, I love languages, and I'm kind of good at it. I'm not that good at chemistry and things like that, but spelling and writing is really naturally interesting for me. So that's
and I know from experience that growing up in Belgium, you are basically at least bilingual, if not more.
Yes.
Or you were bathed in languages all the time.
Yes, and the mental, the mind, I think, is different because we're exposed constantly at a very young age. I mean, my parents took us camping in Italy, in Austria, in France, I went to England. And those are really different cultures also. It's not far away in kilometers, but it's very different. So your mind is already way wide open. I noticed that when I arrived in America, I first taught French in a middle school. So kids were like between 10 and 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they really did not have that mind. This was 25 years ago. So even though their parents traveled and things like that, they really didn't realize there's something else out there because this country is so huge.
Exactly.
You don't have time to see it.
We talked about this before we recorded, that living in Belgium, what I loved the most was in 2 hours, I could be in 4 different countries. I could be in the UK, I could be in France, I could be in Holland, I could be in Germany or Luxembourg. And 2 hours from here, I am still in Utah.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's a big difference.
Yes. Okay, so you started, then you started teaching French, and then how did you start translation?
So I wanted to be a translator, but I needed a job right away because I was on a tourist visa, and that's 90 days. And Chris and I did not want to rush into getting married. I wanted to kind of test the waters getting married. And so I found a job teaching French in this private middle school. Mm-hmm. That was fine. I did that for 3 years and it was a great experience, but I'm definitely not so much a teacher. Mm-hmm. I don't, especially with children that age, I don't think I could be a very good motivator for children who are at the age where they get a little on the lazy side or they need to be encouraged to do efforts. So I enjoyed it for the experience. I did not enjoy it for something that I would do long term. And at the same time, I was pursuing beginning my career as a translator. And that's when I took enrolled in a certificate in translation from New York University online. Mm-hmm. So I could kind of do both at the same time and began building that part of my life.
And how did you get your first translation clients?
Well, at New York University, one of my classmates, whom I've never met, wrote and said she was already working. She had an overload and asked me to take over part of the job. And that was my first job.
Oh wow, that came like,
yeah, pretty cool.
In your lap.
Exactly, I did nothing really. It was just very cool.
Okay, and then you developed your career from there. How did you get more clients, and how did you get?
Well, it's interesting because it was surprisingly easy. I did a few things. I built a website immediately, got my domain name, my business cards, became a member of the ATA, started looking at pros.com and Translators Cafe to get information and networking and things like that. But that's about it. And somehow people started finding me. That it's, I really can't explain. It was all agencies, but agencies were probably prospecting actively at the time, I guess, because I was receiving a lot of requests from agencies, some of which I'm still working with now, today, 20 years later. Mm-hmm. So I got lucky, and then in a way, I never really felt like I had to do something to get a job, and that was kind of turned out to be a little bit of a downfall for me, because I think that's what got me in trouble, and I didn't realize what I was supposed to do at the time.
Well, I do think you did some things to get established, like you said, your website, your ATA membership, and pros and business cards and stuff. So that is a start. And I think also 20 years ago, it was a little bit different for.
Yeah, it was very different.
Yes.
You're right. I think what I did right was to immediately consider this activity as a real business. I've always gotten frustrated when people still now say, oh, do you still do that little translation? You know, things like that. It's something that I really realized from day one. And I think it worked at the time. It worked great, actually.
And I think that since you had owned the store, you already had some sort of business
background. Yeah, Yes, yes, exactly. You're right.
So when did the slump happen and why do you think it happened?
So the slump, when I looked at my numbers, my sales per year, that's one another thing that I did from day one is accounting and looking at the numbers. And so I guess in 2016, 2017, I started seeing the curve going down a little too low for my taste. Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess, mid 2017, I thought, okay, I got to change my ways here. I've always hoped to have the direct clients, but I never did anything for that at mm-hmm. all. I did have a few, but not near enough and not near consistent. So that's kind of when I started. And I think the number one in 2017, I think the agencies in general encountered difficulties because of several factors that were happening on the market, probably in artificial intelligence and machine translation are certainly one factor. I think another factor is now agencies have access to translators from all over the world, where some countries practice rates that are much lower than in America or even in Western Europe. So that's probably, I mean, if I were an agency and I could find somebody quality who's you know expecting half of what we're expecting, that's something that's totally normal. It's the market that global market that does that. So I think that's a few things, but the main thing for me that I can control now that I didn't is I didn't market myself. I did not don't do the active marketing. Yeah, I had the base covered, and I think another thing that I always did was to be very proactive. I always answer my emails very quickly. Even if it's a no, I respond. I, to my surprise, realized that some translators at the time were turning in translations that were absolutely unacceptable, not even proofread. So I didn't realize that what seemed normal to me in terms of respecting my client was not that obvious for other people. And then I guess that's how I was standing out of the crowd.
Yes, yes. That is a good point, that you can be unique and stand out just by being professional sometimes.
Well, it's a little disappointing to see that some people are like that, but it's a fact. I did enough proofreading jobs to see that. In fact, I stopped doing that for a long time. I don't do proofreading anymore because it's depressing. It's thinking, how can you turn that in without even the basic, you know, proofreading yourself?
I know. I only offer proofreading if I know the translator.
Yeah, me too. Exactly.
You also say that you are I call it multi-passionate these days.
I like that. I like that word.
Hard time specializing. Yeah. Do you think that played into the slump? And what did you do about that?
I don't know if that plays, because it would have played the role before. I suppose. I mean, I had 15 years of so many jobs that I was basically declining 50% of the offers I was receiving. I was picking and choosing what I liked and what paid well, and it was amazing for a long time. So I don't know exactly if that's a factor, but I do regret not having a more deep, clear specialization. I decided for me, I'm not going to change that now. I don't have the stamina to start new studies and go deep. But the thing is, my nature is like that. I'm somebody who just wants to try everything, and mm-hmm. I don't get all the way to being an expert, but I get good enough that that what I do is enjoyable and profitable. So it goes with sports, it goes with crafts or leisure activities or work or whatever. I do so many different things. It's not very comfortable, but it's part of my nature. I'm not a one straight line person at all. So
You still turn things down that you feel like you can't do a good job for, chemical or engineering or
of course, totally.
Yes.
But I'm very avid to learn new things. So mm-hmm. so recently I did a job on the architecture construction with straw bales. Mm-hmm. Which is a new sustainable construction method. Mm-hmm. I know of it. I'm interested because I think, wow, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But I'm certainly not an expert. And I immensely enjoyed the research that I did for that job. It was a large job. And I still think I did a good job. I'm certainly not a technician in that method of construction. So that's where I think there's a middle ground, and for people like me who mm-hmm. are multi-passionate, I love that. I love that word. It's so cool. Because you can also offer something much more, a service that's more versatile to a client, especially direct clients, probably more than agencies.
Okay. So back to the downturn, what did you do about it to get out?
Well, I called for help. Hello, Tess Whitty, help me here. I think the first thing that I did was attend a summit.
The financial success.
That Moira, yes. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got to know all the names of your people, the coaches, the people who are giving us tips and ways to work better and to be more effective. And so I looked around and browsed around, and then I started really investing in webinars. I think I took 10 or 12, 10 or maybe 11 altogether, mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. to learn this massive amount of information that I'm still processing every day. I mean, I still go back to my notes all the mm-hmm. time. I mean, it's never ending. It's not where I'm not where this is in the past. This is my present now. Is okay. Today, I don't have a lot of work. So boom, onto my notebook with all my marketing ideas, tips and projects and I go to work on that, and I know what to do, which is fantastic. Thanks to you guys.
Okay. Thanks. Yes. So, and I think that is important for everyone, even for successful people, to not start feeling too comfortable.
Exactly.
To keep developing and keep marketing, because the I think the industry is getting more competitive too.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And the rates are, kind of not very exciting sometimes. I mean, I feel like you have to negotiate more than you used to.
Yes.
But before all that, I think there's one thing that I did that we don't talk about enough, is that I sat down and I thought, okay, I took some time to say what exactly is going on here. And it includes facing the failure, the things that you didn't do right. I did a lot of things very well that I'm really proud of, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I really started, I've got a whole half a notebook about what's wrong with me, what was wrong with me, basically. I'm really not afraid to say that I failed some, I did some things wrong, or I failed to do some things that had to be done at a certain time. And the mindset in there is very important. I'm not going to dwell on my failures. I mean, that's behind, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. I've learned so much. I'm kind of grateful it happens, because I feel so much smarter in my job now that I've gone through that.
And I'm glad you say that, because mindset is very important, and it doesn't really, yes, you can look at what you have done wrong, but that doesn't even help if you don't do something about it.
Exactly. And, but you have to start there. You have to start by saying, okay, what in my case specifically is the negative side that led to this? And then you go to action and finding things that you can do.
Your first thing was to look at what you think you did wrong, and then you invested in courses. But what did you do after that? What can you give us some examples of how you started marketing yourself and your translation services?
Okay, I started by revisiting all my memberships and profiles and clean mm-hmm. up, and I still do that on a regular basis. I go back and look. A very hard thing for me, since I'm multi-passionate, is to identify my client. So mm-hmm. I'm still working on that daily, because I have ideas. Maybe I should call, I could do this and write all the companies that are in this sector, or I want to contact companies in Dallas. So I've got a flood of ideas, and I need to sort out and make plans and get organized, which that is a little bit hard. But so basically I did revamping my activate my presence everywhere. Mm-hmm. I became a member of the French American Chamber of Commerce of Dallas. So mm-hmm. they, not right now, but they have meetings and things like that where you meet mm-hmm. a bunch of businesses locally. And I plan to develop that drastically as soon as we can start again with those meetings. But I got one client from there who was looking for a French translator, a direct client. Yeah. And then I did some paid advertising. There is a newsletter for French speaking expatriates called French District. It's very well done, very active. They send you a new newsletter every month. And they're loaded with fun information.
Targeting. How did you find that newspaper? Did you subscribe to
it? Oh, my gosh. I don't know. I guess internet. I looked around. Mm-hmm. I always spent a lot of time looking around to whatever. But finally, I bought a one-year subscription. I'm subscribed, but I made an ad. Mm-hmm. What they do is it's expensive. It lasts 1 year, and you design your own little business card that pops up every once in a while on the homepage. Mm-hmm. But then there's a page, my whole page is there. If somebody clicks on my business card or looks for a translator or something like that, you click on it and it opens up a full page of, description, and of course with call to action and link to the my website, but it's a description more detailed of what I do. Mm-hmm. And somebody called me one day from New York and said, well, I saw your ad, and I have a friend in Paris who's desperately that was the word looking for a translator, which is interesting to me that you can still be desperately looking for a French translator.
Yes.
I mean, it feels like we're all over the place, but I guess not for everybody.
No, because and, you don't know where to look.
Right, exactly. You're totally right. So that came gave me basically paid for the whole year ad, that job, and it's still going with that direct client. So
is that French to English then, or
that one is French to English? Yes.
So do you translate in both directions?
I do, and I work with an American proofreader for the English part. I don't.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. I love your ideas, and I watched your presentation, and one thing that I really liked was your idea notebook.
Yeah, my idea notebook is right here on my desk. Mm-hmm. It's not my day timer. It's just a nice looking notebook that I bought for that, and it's every day I put an entry in it. I force myself to put an entry, meaning something that I did, like I called somebody or I wrote two emails or whatever, or some idea of something that I will do. Like mm-hmm. last night I was talking to my husband about something and an idea came in the conversation and I thought, oh, okay, that goes in the book so that I can continue what I'm trying to not, you know, go switch one activity and another. If you're in the middle of translation, mm-hmm. I don't want to say, oh, let me do that. Mm-hmm. So the notebook is there for that. I put whatever is going through my mind. And then whenever I have a couple of hours, I just go back and look. And it's amazing. I mean, it's just amazing. I flip two pages back and I got to follow up this person. Follow up mm-hmm. is difficult for me. I'm still a little intimidated by the follow up. Thing.
Yes.
So this helps me very much.
So, but it sounds like you had already then committed to doing something every day.
This is recent. I haven't had the notebook for a very long time. Maybe a couple of years, but not from the beginning of my slump time.
Okay. Because you said that you write down what actions you did take that day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. True. That's true.
That sounds like some sort of a marketing plan.
Well, you're right. It's like a randomly organized marketing plan. Mm-hmm. You know, the marketing plans where it says, by the end of November, I will have landed two new clients. That's hard for me. I mean, it's hard for me because suddenly I get a huge translation job, which I can't do anything else when I have a job that comes first. It's priority. Yes. And then, see, I mean, that kind of thing, I know it works for some people, so I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but it's just hard for me.
I just wanted to say that I love that you have taken the idea and made it yours and you do what works for you.
Exactly.
That is never wrong.
No, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
You've gathered, you invested in courses and everything, but then you gathered the information and you made it yours and you took the actions that worked for you.
Yeah.
So,
and I would like to add also that it's very hard to spend money when you're not making any.
Yes.
Or where I was making some, but not near enough. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely hard to and kind of a source of anxiety. Think of mm-hmm. is this going to work? But I have to say right now, everything I did to some degree really, really helps and has been paid for now. So
your investment paid back.
Oh, yeah. And more so. I mean, between last year's and this year, my turnover has tripled. I'm going to end up this year with three times what I did last year.
That's amazing, Grete, because of we're in a recession.
Yes, we are. That's the thing. And I did say in my presentation, I think it's Corinne Mackay said that says that repeatedly, Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work out there. There's plenty of work for everybody. Yes. You just have to do it, deliver good quality, and go get it. And, mm-hmm. and that's extremely comforting, even in times of recession.
And just to realize that there are people out there not aware where to look, and you can't just sit there and wait for jobs to land in your inbox. You have to go out and find both clients, but also the jobs that you want and you mm-hmm. enjoy in order to have a good career.
Yes, it's very true. Even here in Dallas, close to me, there are people who don't know where to look. And mm-hmm. I'm in a bunch of local groups, locally in Dallas, because I want to target that market also. And there are still people who don't know. It's mm-hmm. It's amazing, but it's very true.
Yes. So one of the investments you did was to invest in the Marketing Mastery for Experienced Translators, my sort of flagship course. Can you tell me or the listeners what this course taught you or helped you with?
If I'm correct, I think it was one of the first courses that I learned, that I took. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I'm not a very organized person, but at the same time, I'm very type A. It's bizarre to say that, but it is. Mm-hmm. And so I enjoy being organized. I enjoy knowing what's coming and having most of my day planned out when mm-hmm. I start. And I think that what I really take from that course, of course, is a plethora of tips and things that I did not know, or I knew without knowing, or I wasn't doing. Mm-hmm. But it's just to put them in a structured presentation that that helps me get organized and not do things in a panic. Have a real plan mm-hmm. that's thorough. I think that to me that's the main thing that I get from you, is that you seem to be a very thorough, organized person. And that really was what I need. It still is what I need today.
All right. Well, thank you. That's good mm-hmm. to hear. yes, I've been known for my sort of step-by-step instruction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And of course, you know, making exercises and still practicing. I still have the sheets, the exercise sheets.
The worksheets, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the worksheets. I've got some blank copies and I still use them every once in a while just for myself.
That's great. Mm-hmm. So what tips would you give to other translators that who might feel stuck or stagnant? Especially right now.
Well, I would start with mindset. I guess the first thing is to try to figure out what you can control in this world. I mean, it's not very, very useful to say, we're in a recession, so that's mm-hmm. why mm-hmm. I'm just falling apart. Mm-hmm. We are in a recession. Everybody is probably impacted with that. But if you start by playing victim, you're not going to go very far.
Yes.
So I think looking at the things you can control and that you can change, and then learn if you don't know, like me, if I didn't know what to do, I knew I had to do something, but I didn't know what to do. Well, I went out and learned. And boy, there are webinars, there are books, there are podcasts, it's almost too much. I mean, you mm-hmm. everywhere you look, there's a flood of information, and all of it is interesting and sometimes repetitive in a different way. So learn and then go to action. Not only learn, you gotta get out and do it.
I know.
That's what I said.
And I personally always try to learn more too. And one of the things that I have noticed that if I invest in a course, you can most likely get all that information on Google. But of course, when you invest in it, first of all, you're more committed. And second of all, it is structured in an organized way to take you through the steps.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Organized and structured. Mm-hmm. Because with Google and this whole digital world, we are flashed constantly by disorganized information and data and all that. And it's just like, I have to be careful all the time to not let my mind go wandering everywhere and go check on Facebook who's there, and then respond to a WhatsApp message, and then it's excessive. I mean, it's too much. Sometimes I want to look for a message from somebody, and I don't remember what channel that person used, whether it's messages, WhatsApp, email, you name it. And so we do need structure. Mm-hmm. We do need structure, and the fact is, if you go through a slump, it's probably normal. I mean, when I see the people who talk to me about it, I'm not the only one, far from.
No.
And you get out of it, and as long as you can deliver good quality work, you'll get work. There's work, plenty of work.
Yes, that is a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have already said what you did to get out of your slump, what marketing you did, but right now, do you have any other marketing method works well for you right now?
Well, first of all, what I noticed is that I get a lot of people finding me now. So inbound seems to be working well. Works for me, I would put that in capital letters, patience, because it's a slow process.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just whatever you do, you have to be patient and know that eventually it's going to pay off somehow. And then adding also to what we've talked about is creativity. Especially for me, who's not super specialized, I need to find a way to stand up from the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I give you an example. I read in a professional magazine that we receive here in Dallas, an article about a person who a businessman. Very successful businessman, and he has a name that sounds French, that looks French to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I'm going to go look at if this guy is French. So he is French, and his company works internationally. So I thought, I'm going to find him on LinkedIn and write him a note and say, you're I can't remember importing or exporting. I mean, you're doing business internationally.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have no time to have your communication translated in several languages. So here's what I would like to do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And he very nicely immediately answered and said, thank you, but I'm not interested, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. I mean, that's going to happen, of course, 90% of the times. But that's the kind of things that I do now, is look around and see things. Another example is I had found a job offer for a company that's based in Paris, translator, and I wrote them, and it was an in-house job, and I wrote them, and because France, as you know, is not on full lockdown, but almost right now.
Yeah.
So I wrote and said to their HR, I researched their HR person, found it, and wrote her and said, would you consider a remote position? And here's what I have to offer. And basically, I didn't write that, but I would probably cost them half of what they'll pay an in-house person.
Mm-hmm.
I have not received an answer yet, but I'm going to follow up on that. You see, that's something they want an in-house person, but I'm offering something different, and you never know.
And I really like that, Grete, that you are taking action. You're trying different things, and you won't get anything if you don't try. So
exactly. And I'm telling you, cold email is horribly hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm learning, and I still have to get myself to write, you know, 50 cold emails one day or in 2 days.
They're that cold, because I think you have already researched them and find.
Almost warm, not very well, lukewarm, let's say, because, you know,
yes.
I'm out of the blue there. They don't know me, but I try to find a connection to why I'm writing them.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that I'm doing right now is following companies on LinkedIn that I'm interested in without connecting with them. I don't want to barge in and say, hey,
yes,
I want to work with you. But I'm following so I can learn what they post, what they do, how they do it and all that. And then eventually I'll start being a little more directly connecting with them.
So do you sort of set aside time to be on LinkedIn, read on LinkedIn?
Not regularly, but I'm a morning person, so I work on translation from about 6 in the morning until 2 or 3 or 4, depending on the load and, mm-hmm. and my state of mind. Mm-hmm. But by 4 o'clock, I'm usually ready to do something else. So
yeah,
of course there's walking and exercising and yoga and all that, but there's mm-hmm. also very almost every day, half an hour or an hour to looking around what's going on here and there. What have I done in terms of marketing? I mean, that's almost daily that I go think about or do something or think about something.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really, really good. It's so nice to talk to you, and I think you have done a great job, and I'm so glad that you came onto the show and told us your story.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to share my story, and because I think it's quite a story. And I also want to say thank you to you, because I know that what you do, Your coaching and teaching activity is a hard work, and you do a fabulous job of offering great things where we can learn. I don't think I could ever do that, by the way, but it was very useful to me, and will be for a long time anyway.
Well, thank you. It's mm-hmm. truly a passion project for me. And I think that I'm doing it because my marketing background helped me a lot. So I want to sort of pay it forward.
I see. And I have no marketing background at all. So that's what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. And thank you for being an alumni to the course. And I am so happy that I could be part of your journey as the teacher in the Marketing Mastery for Experienced Translators. So thank you. And
thank you too.
I also want to thank all the listeners. I hope you found a lot of valuable insights here. Both Grete and I would love to hear from you. You can comment in the show notes, which can be found at marketingtipsfortranslators.com in the podcast section. I'm not quite sure which number this one is going to be, but you can always do a search in the search bar. And if you like this episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app to not miss any episodes. You can also leave me a review from the show notes or in the podcast listening app, and share the episode with anyone else that you think might benefit from it. So thank you again, Grete.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it.
And thank you to the listeners, and we will see you in the next episode. Hey, before you go, I wanted to tell you about an upcoming free webinar on January 27th. at two different times. This free masterclass is backed by popular demand, and in it we will talk about the five mindset shifts you need to grow your translation business to six figures. So we are going to talk about how to grow from working too much for too little to a thriving freelance translation business, working with your ideal clients and projects. You will learn how to charge higher rates, the common excuses to charging more and what to do about them, how to finally declare a niche, so you get tips on how to find a specific niche you can focus on, and how to sell results, which means helping clients understand the value of your services, plus how to keep bringing you in new leads. So you will get focus and a plan for new leads so that you can keep the projects coming in and grow your income and business. Whether you feel like you're working with the same old clients, unable to grow your income, or working too much for too little, I want you to know that it doesn't have to be that way. With some new strategies, and in particular, a new way to look at your business, you can be on your way to six-figure freelance business. I have interviewed many six-figure freelance translators, including myself being one of them, not being interviewed, but being a six-figure freelancer. And I want to share the five most important shifts we've all done to get to a six-figure annual income. So join me to find out what to do to start shifting your mindset and grow your business in 2020 and beyond. Just go to marketingtipsfortranslators.com/yes to register and choose your time. There will be a recording if you can't attend live, but if you attend live, you will be able to get all your questions answered. So I hope to see you on January 27th. Thank you for listening to Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you found some good tips to apply to your freelance career. If you did, a great way to show this is by leaving a review on your favorite podcast listening app or to share the episode with other colleagues. Do you have a topic, question, or a guest you would like to hear about here? Send me an email to podcast@marketingtipsfortranslators.com.